As weird as this sounds, you know what one of my favorite desserts is at the end of a, a good meal, a long day, and you just want to relax? A bowl of cereal. I love cereal. Don't get it as much as I used to, especially as a kid, but the biggest reason is there's really, it's not healthy at all. The cereal that we like, it's that sugary, carb loaded, just empty calories is really all it is. But it's just so good so time sometimes. But that is where Magic Spoon has stepped in and said, you know what? Adults like cereal. Let's make some healthy cereal that actually tastes like cereal, something good, something indulgent. And so they have come up with a zero sugar, high protein, low carb, very tasty cereal. It's keto friendly, it's gluten free, it's grain free, soy free, GMO free, and it comes in four different flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. That covers pretty much all the bases of everything that that I would indulge in. And so, if you're looking for kind of that craving satisfier of having a great bowl of cereal, something I actually just had, but without the guilt attached to it, Magic Spoon is your answer. If you'd like to try some, go to magicspoon.com/ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast and grab yourself a variety pack today. And if you don't absolutely love it, they have 100% money back guarantee. And again, New Year's is coming up. We're all trying to be a new self. Maybe it's a bowl of cereal to start your day that can help you do that. magicspoon.com/ASP. And you can use the code ASP for free shipping. All right, now on to the adventure.
First bullet is a rubber ball, just to have like a step-by-step procedure so you can let the bear know that you hit him first without using full bullets. And we also have signal pistols. Bear spray is very effective. Of course, you need the good conditions because, of course, if you use the spray and there's no wind, it means that the bear is very close to you.
These are multi-week, even month-long trips of crossing these giant expanses of ice that are not even, they are not safe in a lot of ways, and they are constantly changing because of climate change. The world is getting hotter. Whether you want to argue about what's causing that, the world is getting hotter. And so Vincent and his partner, also famed explorer Borg Ausland, are doing this together, this project. They've done about seven of these glaciers and ice caps that they're crossing, and they've got 13 more to go. They're scattered all over the world, and this project is incredible, and they're calling it the Ice Legacy Project. You can find out more about it at icelegacy.com, where you can see an exact, GPS route of what they took, the exact route, where it was, satellite images, videos, and really visualize what they're doing here. 'Cause it's incredible. I can't tell you, a glacier is not like walking across a frozen river. Some of these glaciers are the size of countries, and they are going across such uncertain terrain. These things called snow bridges that can collapse, where they get dropped into, thousands of feet of crevasses, to dealing with polar bears, to the weather, to the terrain. There's so many variables, and it's so ridiculously cold. I really encourage you to look into it. It's incredible. But anyway, this has been like a 6-minute intro, so I apologize for all of that. Here is the episode. And we're talking to Vincent Colliard. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mason. Good to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for jumping on. So where are you coming from in the world today?
So right now we're doing this call from right above the Arctic Circle in Norway, in the beautiful archipelago of the Lofoten Islands.
So you're actually in the Arctic Circle right now.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's actually feels, it really feels the winter already. So the days are getting shorter and shorter every day. And soon, in about a month, I think we will dive into the polar night.
Oh my gosh.
Which seems could be boring for some people and could be very interesting for some others who are willing to step outside on a clear day and watch the Northern Lights.
How do you handle the winter?
I think it's really about perspectives and how we put things into perspectives, because of course winter here can be tough, but also in the same time, if we want to use it as an opportunity, it's a great way to spend some time and just barely see the sun going out, sun rising and then sunsetting right after. And then it's a great opportunity, yeah, to watch the Northern Lights. And still, it's you have to enter in a kind of a winter mode. I think it really feels to be close to living like a mother polar bear. You know, the winter comes and she's staying inside the den with the cubs, and it's a long winter. But it's also a very interesting period, and we're going to spend some time here together with my girlfriend and in a small village called Henningsvær, which is a fishing village. It's just basically a couple of rocks in the ocean.
And that's the village.
So very interesting place to prepare. Well, hopefully, to be honest, hopefully this COVID-19 thing is slowing down and we can get back to adventuring. So we'll have this time to prepare a great 2021, hopefully.
Absolutely. Well, tell us this. Where did you grow up and how did you get introduced to adventures? Just because, you know, we always love to hear what, you know, you're obviously doing incredible things now, but where were you introduced to all this?
I was introduced to adventuring because at first place I had the great opportunity to grow in a place in the Basque region in France, in the southwest, close to the Spanish border. And it's a place where basically you are able to do some mountaineering and do some sailing in the same day. So it's between the Atlantic Ocean and the mountain of the Pyrenees, and then I read adventure stories when I was I think I was still a teenager, if I was 16 or 17, and I heard stories about polar explorers, and I heard about the ice and the polar bears. And it's probably because I didn't have any ice back home that I got interest into it. I don't know. I really feel sometimes it's like this in life when you don't have something and you really want to have it. And then you will. So it was just, I think, a matter of curiosity. And then I started traveling to Svalbard. So Svalbard is an archipelago about 1,000 kilometers from the North Pole. It belongs to Norway, and yeah, it's kind of a little polar mecca, so it's a great place to learn. And I went there when I was 18, and then yeah, I came there. It was again the middle of the polar winter. It was January, and I didn't know nothing about winter camping, how to start a stove when it's cold, and how to handle the moisture when you sleep in a tent for many days in a row. And I think from that trip, I think I caught the virus, and the virus, I still have the virus these days.
You caught the good virus, the good, not the coronavirus.
I caught the good virus indeed. The virus of the polar region.
The virus of the polar region. You know, some people would not look at that as a good virus as well. But someone like me who's from a warmer climate, you know, might say, I don't know about that, but it's incredibly impressive and incredibly inspiring seeing what y'all are doing. But so from there, you caught the virus, you caught the bug, you were excited to do these trips. You know, from that point, what started opening your eyes to kind of how the world was changing, how climate change was taking effect? Were you just happily doing your expeditions and not really thinking about that, and then something opened your eyes? What was that experience of learning kind of the effect of climate change?
So I think at first I was interested in the polar regions because of the challenge and these rugged and raw environments, and still are unique places where I feel alive in a way and connected to nature. And I had the great opportunity to meet my like childhood hero, who is a Norwegian called Børge Ousland. And he was the first man to reach the North Pole in solo and unsupported. So I think in the beginning, the attraction for this place was because it was tough and because it was, I think, a personal challenge to grow so I could grow as a person and get more knowledge. And then there is one major expedition 10 years ago, sailing. I was together so with Børge, and we sail around the North Pole in one single season. And through the Northwest Passage, which is, the passage that connects the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific. We sailed that stretch in just over 3 weeks. And only one century ago, the Norwegian Roald Amundsen used 3 years. So, of course, we had better technology, more information, better boats. But the main reason why we were able to sail that stretch that quickly is because of the ice retreat. And one day we were in a very narrow strait called the Bello. And usually Bello is a place that you don't really sail there because it's packed of ice, so it's very difficult. But it's also kind of a shortcut in the passage. And we sailed that stretch, and it was no ice. And suddenly there is a polar bear that is on the shore, and we approach with the trimaran, and we are now about 15 meters from that polar bear. And I clearly remember the way that polar bear looked at us. And I realized that day, later on, that this polar bear deprived from sea ice. So basically, he can't hunt seal. It's exactly the same thing as if we were to take away all our supermarkets from our cities. Mm. And then I realized, okay, the polar regions are maybe tough. And that's why I was attracted by them, because it was like a personal ego challenge. But in the end, I realized, well, these 1 or 2 degrees of warming temperature, they are turning ice into water. And so that's where I grew up in Biarritz, which is a surfer town. You don't really feel 1 or 2 degrees of warming temperature. And it's actually, everyone is pretty happy about it. And I'm also happy to spend more time in t-shirt during the year. But in the end, I realized that the polar regions are extremely fragile environments. And so a few years later, when Børge mentioned the idea about crossing the 20 largest ice caps, not only for fun, but to bridge science and adventure. And then I was just hooked, because for me, that was the logical path. It was to try to work on a conservation project, or on a project that is not just about adventure.
So you saw firsthand the effect of climate change on these, you know, very, very extreme but very delicate places. And then Børge came up with that idea of the 20 ice caps. So what about that intrigued you, and how interesting or how amazing was it to be doing this with, you know, what you called a childhood hero?
So it's like being a kid the day of Christmas when you still believe and you wait for Santa Claus to come in the chimney and, you know, and make this great depot of gifts. And that was pretty much the same thing when I shared my first expedition together with Borge. And also, I think my life really changed after I met him, because for the amount of knowledge that the legacy of knowledge, and we might have nine expeditions together. We might have done 9 expeditions together. And so I started, I remember I barely knew how to correctly pitch a tent in windy conditions, and then from a childhood it became like my expedition partner. Great achievement.
I imagine, man. That's so cool to hear that, you know, it's at some point I'm sure it does feel a little more normal, but at the beginning, how amazing is it that you get to do this with someone you looked up to? That's really cool. So tell us about the Ice Legacy Project. It is crossing the 20 largest glaciers in the world in an effort to raise awareness and to raise awareness about this issue of them all essentially melting and disappearing.
Yeah, so the Ice Legacy is that it's the ongoing series of expeditions, so crossing the 20 largest ice caps on the planet. So for a short definition, we have on our planet the ice sheets that are really big. For the number, it's above 50,000 square kilometers. And wow. These are Greenland and Antarctica. And then we have ice caps. And so our goal is to cross these 20 ice caps. We have done 7 so far. And of course, we like these places. But the main, really the idea is to bridge science, bridge adventure and science. Sometimes when I hear numbers from scientists that there's this amount of square kilometer that has melted, I don't understand the numbers. And so the idea of the project is to have this the storytelling and the adventure combined with science efforts. So for example, the next expedition, so Borge has already crossed the southern ice cap in Patagonia in 2003. So I will hopefully do it next year together with Caroline Cote, my girlfriend. And the idea is to sample some ice every day in order to collect some black carbon. So to make it simple, we melt some snow or ice, and then we collect, we process the water on a filter, and then we collect some black carbon on these filters. And there's a lot of CO2 in the atmosphere, and some CO2 is natural, coming out, for example, from a volcano, and some is also coming from our own responsibility. Just our way of life and our economical model is producing a lot of CO2. And so the final goal of Ice Legacy in the end is if we are able to know what is the human responsibility in the glacier recession. And even beyond this, the overall idea and mission of Ice Legacy is to try to answer the question of how can purposeful adventures help us rethink our way of life and the way we consume products. And because, of course, it's like we vote, well, at least in France, we vote every 4 years for a president, but we vote every single day with our credit card. When the happiness of a society is based on consumption, consuming products. I think, first of all, the society is maybe a little bit sick. And also, every time we buy something, that has an impact. And in the end, it has an impact far away from the payment terminal. It has an impact all the way to the glacier recession. That's the mission of Ice Legacy.
That's an overwhelmingly important mission. Is it difficult to complete this challenge and to also maintain like a sense of, I don't know, accomplishment or a sense of joy out there? Because I watched some videos of some of your some of the expeditions you've already completed, and it's absolutely breathtaking, absolutely stunning. It's a place that seems so incredible. Is it hard to enjoy?
Well, yeah, there's one way. There's that bright side of enjoying the field, and there is of course the dark side of and even to myself, I have this confusion, and I'm questioning myself, because in the end we're not preaching, you know, and neither judging actions of others. We're just really trying to question ourselves. And the fact that we see the beauty of our planet, and because we're so lucky to travel to these places, we feel that we all have inside us all the responsibility to protect wild open spaces. So, and of course, we're trying to reach a broader audience, and especially people that will never have the chance to travel to the polar regions. It's how can we inspire them to act and to clean their acts, so we can reduce in the end our carbon footprint. Another point is because in the climate discussion, some people would believe about the climate change and the fact that humans are responsible, and some others won't. But no matter what, in the end, do we want to be part of the solution or part of the problem? And if we don't believe of the responsibility of humans in the climate change, maybe it is still not probably an excuse not to take care of our planet and to leave a rich world to explore for our children.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's an important, no matter what you believe about it, taking care of the planet and reversing any damage we do is obviously the minimum. So if you don't mind, I'd love to ask some details like about the experience itself and what it's been like so far. You say you've completed seven of these so far. When you go out, do you complete one at a time, or are you trying to group them together? And where are these places located?
So these places are located, mainly in the high latitudes, mm-hmm. Both in the north and the south hemisphere, except for Pakistan. That is this one, the Karakoram, is still on the list. And then apart from this one, they are Alaska, Canada, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Patagonia, Antarctica, and I forgot one in the northern hemisphere, Greenland.
Wow, that's pretty cool that it's in so many varied places. I would assume they were all kind of bunched together in Greenland or something. But the fact that they are split between the hemispheres, and many of them are outside the Arctic circles, what a varied experience. You know, experiencing essentially the same type of environment, but in so many different places. That's exciting. You've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. And for example, the ice caps, we crossed the three largest ice caps in Alaska, and they are very different from the ones in Canada, for example. So the terrain in Alaska is very alpine, especially the Stikine ice field and the Chugach mountain range. This is pretty alpine. And then other glaciers in Canada are way smoother. And also it depends on Yeah, the age of these ice caps. Some of them are different. So some older glaciers are smoother, and some ice caps that are surrounded by young and sharp mountains. These are really broken, and sometimes. One day, I remember back on the sticky ice field, we use about 12 hours to do a 1 kilometer. So, yeah, not nearly a half a mile.
Oh my gosh!
So I remember at the end of the day, we just pitched a tent and we looked back and we're like, "Oh, okay, that was last night camp," and we could just see it. Yeah,
could throw a rock to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what is it? What does it mean to cross these? What's the terrain? Like you said, it varies. But what does it look like? How do you carry your gear? Is it on your back? Are you on skis? What are you doing to get these completed?
So in Alaska, because the terrain is pretty complicated, we end up usually the most complicated areas of an ice cap or a glacier is the beginning, the entrance, and the way out, because that's the place. And then in the middle you have the cap, right? And this is where you ski. But to access this plateau, usually you need first, when we start at sea level and the ice is raw and pretty broken, we end up carrying our equipment on our back. And so when we go for a month or a month and a half unsupported, we have to carry everything back and forth many times in the beginning. Because for us, which is really important, is that we go unsupported, so we don't receive any support from the outside world. So we start, this is the essence to me of adventure, is you start with all your gear and then you complete your mission or your crossing, and you don't receive any help on the way, or if you do, is because you're in trouble. And basically, just as an idea, one day of food is 1 kilo. So then so if you go for 45 days, it's you have pretty much 45 kilo of food, and plus on top of this the fuel and then all the equipment to be able to cross the glacier. So from ropes to ice axe, crampons, skis, sleds. So when we are on the plateau, we are all the time using sleds, because it's much better to pull a 60 kilo or 80 kilo sleds than carrying a 30 kilo backpack, for sure.
How do you stay warm? Are you just kind of used to this stuff? But is there any special equipment you use to either, you know, stay warm during the day or stay warm at night? Or has it been much of an issue to deal with that?
Well, during the day, the idea is to it's like riding, I would say, a bicycle to keep the balance. You must just keep moving, and that's the same with the temperature of our body. To stay warm, we gotta just keep on moving. That's what we do throughout the day, and we just take short breaks to have a little bit of fuel, so food and drinks, and then we can continue all the way to the evening. And then in the evening, as soon as you pitch the tent, we basically do everything from our sleeping bags. So inside the tent, we are sitting in a kind of a chair, and you are already in the sleeping bag, and you don't leave the sleeping bag until the next day. So we are making sure that we conserve the warmth, because of course, in a cold environment, it takes a lot of energy to stay warm, and it takes good gear, but also a good routine. So if we just open the sleeping bag and then just go outside, and we lose a lot of heat. So the idea is to try to stay in the bag as long as we can. And so like this, when we eat and digest the food, it brings calories to the body and heat it up, and then it hits the sleeping bag. So
that is so fascinating.
Yep. So when it's cold, there's a really a procedure, and the difficult trips are the ones that we need to fight with the moisture. So for example, in Patagonia or in places close to the Arctic Ocean, when there is a, we need to realize that when it's cold and when there's a lot of moisture, it's very hard to dry equipment. And for just to give you an idea, when we sleep, when we are inside our sleeping bags, in some places you must use what they call the vapor barrier, which is basically like a big, huge plastic bag that you are sleeping inside. So the moisture of your body when you are drying your socks between your legs or in the warm parts of your body, all the moisture is trapped inside this bag. Because if you don't use this bag and then the moisture goes inside the sleeping bag, if it's really cold, the ice will start forming inside the sleeping bag. And that is, and then it's a big mess.
Oh my gosh. So do you just stay wet all night?
Well, you at least try to keep the moisture. And then in the morning when it's really cold, you can brush these vapor barriers. So because then if you take these vapor barriers out of the sleeping bag and then in the tent or in the vestibule of the tent, the moisture becomes ice because it's so cold, and then you can just brush the ice of the vapor barrier and then it's dry again. But then you can't do this if the moisture has gone into the sleeping bag. Then it's no, there's no way except opening the sleeping bag with a knife or so, and then it's a big mess.
God, Vincent, man, that sounds so cold. How do you even get up and start walking after a day that cold, honestly?
No, but the thing is that when you have so this kind of routine, you can really enjoy it. And that's what I really like about polar exploration, is that we're not supposed to live there and we're just passing through. But when we are able to be comfortable at minus 30 or minus 40, it's really, in a way, it's really a treat, because it's like there's no room for mistakes. But if you have a good plan and you manage to be comfortable in this environment, you really see it in a different way. And then suddenly you enjoy it, and it's very beautiful.
So tell us this, you know, you're covering the cold, obviously, is a big danger. Are there any other dangers that you've faced? What are the biggest dangers that you've faced on these expeditions? I know it can probably vary by region, but I saw some equipment that you had in some of the videos and was curious about what you're facing out there.
So yeah, as you said, Mason, it really depends on the region. In Alaska, I think the main danger we had, the two dangers we had were the crevasses and the avalanches. Some places are getting narrow and we have to commit to continue the crossing. So there are some places where we must go and we have no choice. And it can be exposed to avalanches. And it's the same for crevasses. And I remember a few years back in the Chugach mountain range ice field, Borge fell through a crevasse twice in the same afternoon. And that is also something that is actually linked to the warming temperatures of our planet, because of the warming temperatures, the snow bridges are getting weaker. And so two times he was just as, the first time I was leading and then he was in the back and the snow bridge collapsed. But he managed to step on the side, to ski on the side. So he was only down to the knee in the crevasse. And then the second time he was all the way to higher than the hip. So it was very strange to suddenly you see your friend going through a snow bridge that collapsed. And the second time he was leading And suddenly you have your friend in the end of a rope, and immediately we thought about, this is also happening. Of course, snow bridges has broken in the past, even when the climate was colder, but now it's a higher risk when the temperature are warmer. And then some other glaciers, I would say like Svalbard, or Russia, and also Canada, the polar bear is a danger to consider seriously, for sure.
The polar bear. Now, is that why I saw you carrying a gun?
Yeah, so we carry in Svalbard, we had a revolver, actually a Magnum 44, so that you would use this really in case of the bear getting very close to you. And then shotgun, and the first bullet is a rubber ball, just to have like a step-by-step procedure so you can let the bear know that you hit him first without using full bullets. And we also have signal pistols, bear spray. Bear spray is very effective. Of course, you need the good conditions. You need a little bit of wind to help the spray travel, because of course if you use the spray and there's no wind, it means that the bear is very close to you. And then also when we camp in a polar bear territory, we use a tripwire, which is a system that you set up around the tent with a fishing line and a small rod. And to every pole, there is an explosive with it's like a flashlight, so that can help to prevent
flare,
you that
like
there's
a flare gun.
Yeah, like a flare gun. Yeah. Mm. Instead of taking polar bear watches, on a long trip, it's very tiring.
Man, that is so crazy. You have to worry about polar bears and have to set a tripwire around your tent at night. That is exhausting. Have you had any encounters with any bears?
Yeah, I had several, but I would say fortunately, because they're beautiful animals and they are curious, and I think they're not at all killing machines. It's like, I would say, in a certain level, it's like the perception we have with sharks. Some people are defending the sharks and their perception. And I've seen beautiful images where you see a shark and then you see a diver. And then the question mark is, well, who is the killer? And I think it's the same with bear. Of course, they are on the top of the food chain. So if I'm inside me, I'm like really scared, but I try to, when I face a bear, I try to be at his level, and I should not run away and showing that I am a prey, but I will try to act as a predator. And then you can make some really beautiful encounters. One time we tried with two French sailors to go from Alaska all the way to Svalbard, so across the entire Arctic Ocean via the North Pole on a small 23 footer homemade catamaran with no engine. And even though we failed on the journey because we didn't have any food, so we had to turn back, but we met various polar bears. And I remember one evening we were inside our sleeping bags, and there's a young polar bear that came all the way to us, and we couldn't hear him. That is so amazing, because there was no wind, and the catamaran was laying on the ice, and we couldn't hear anything. And when we realized that he was here, he was just right in the back of the catamaran. So he was maybe 3 meters away from us, his head. So we had a pepper spray, used the pepper spray straight away. And the pepper spray was extremely efficient. And I remember we saw the polar bear running, and he was putting his big foot in his face because he had too much spray in his nose. So yeah, that was a good experience, and he was not hurt. The bear was not injured, and we were safe. So,
Vincent, that is crazy, man. First of all, you wanted to travel across the Arctic Ocean in a catamaran with no engine, ran out of food, and had to turn around. That sounds like an episode by itself. And the fact that you ran into a bear as well is pretty remarkable. I'm glad you made it out.
Yeah, well, the math was clear. We for 2 months we sailed north towards North Pole, and then we did 1/3 of the route in 2 months, and then it was so clear that we had to turn back and go and sail all the way back to Canada because we would have been running food, but. Above this expedition and the fact that we turned back, we did this great encounters, and also one day we had this beautiful mother polar bear with two cubs, and in these kind of moments, I really realized that we have the responsibility to I think change our daily habits to try to protect these precious and beautiful animals.
So what would you say is most striking to you about these glaciers and these ice caps? Are you seeing the evidence? I think the answer is probably yes, of climate change. Are you seeing the toes, like the beginning of them, how much it's receded? What about these are either so magnificent or so alarming to you?
Yeah, they are. I think they act like big freezers on our planet, and I think that's the reason why it would be so important that governments on our planet, they don't fight for, sometimes they shouldn't maybe fight for power or for ego, but they should really, well, we shall all together consider the environment as being the place where we come from, and the human body is balanced when it's about 37 and a half Celsius. And when it's too warm, we have fever and we feel pretty bad. It's probably the same with these ice caps. They really regulate the temperature of our planet. And that's why, in a way, that's why it's balanced. And we see that when the polar regions are affected and the ice is disappearing, and then the temperature continue rising, and then we see the coral in close to the equator and in the tropics, we see the coral bleaching, fighting again and dying. And so no matter whether we are in the polar regions or we are in the tropics, I think we are all concerned and we are all in the same boats when it comes to the environment. And these habitats are really close to each other. And for me right now, I didn't understand it before, but no matter if it's the ice, the sea ice, or if it's the coral reefs, they both act like a garden for a rich ecosystem that is feeding on it. And we, in the end, we depend on it. And so even if we're in a big city far away from them, I think we still have all our actions have an impact on them in the end.
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. You know, before we go, could we hear a story from you about maybe one of the best experiences out there, maybe a story of a great day or a great experience out there completing this adventure?
A great day. I think it's that's back in Alaska, because I have so much. I really like Alaska. It's a
great place.
Yeah, I think my favorite place, because there's all the things that I like, from from salmon going upstream rivers to bears and eagles and beautiful big mountains close to wild ocean. It's still very beautiful and untouched. So together with Börje, we successfully crossed the Tjugat range. And I remember in the beginning, I think that was day four, day five, I lost my crampons. So being in the Tjugat range without crampons, it's probably like being in Antarctica with a t-shirt and a short. It's not very what's recommended. So we had this friend, Matt Keller, who came with this bush plane and helped with the crampons, and he just dropped from the sky a pair of crampons with chocolate and salmon. And that, of course, and then I realized what it is to be on a supported trip, and I didn't do the crossing unsupported. But when we were in Alaska and Börje, that's the expedition when Börje fell through a crevasse twice the same day. We basically ended up each day telling each other, well, what a day. And that was the motto, our motto for nearly a month being in these mountains. And in the end, we crossed the ice cap, and then we looked back and we can see the whole range. And I think that was probably one of the best trip and memories I had together with Börje.
That's incredible. Sounds amazing. I've been to Alaska once and would love to go back. What are you looking forward to the most? Which of the expeditions are just kind of on your radar and that you're excited about?
Before, I think it was the achievement of doing the crossing, taking the challenge, and completing the journey. And I think today, what is the most important to me is to bring back samples to give to scientists. That's what today fulfilled me the most. It's to link really the adventure and the science. And so if we can successfully cross an ice cap, and then when I have samples of ice in my sled, it's like these babies, and I'm really trying to take care of them. And so when we deliver it to scientists, for me, I'm like, okay, I'm very stoked because I feel it's a contribution, and it's an adventure that has a purpose, and that's very fulfilling.
That's kind of what expeditions were originally. Were these scientific exploration?
Yep.
And so the adventure itself was kind of just the necessary avenue to get the science from it. So it is like it is connecting you with some of these older expeditioners, these historical events, and so you're able to contribute to that more and to put it to even more of a purpose, which it already is. That's incredible, Vincent. Well, where can people find out more about you and tell us what's your next planned expedition? Do you know what it's going to be?
Yeah, the next plan is to go. So since we are here in Norway, the idea is to go to Svalbard again and do a winter expedition there. So we are very excited to do this together with my girlfriend, as the idea is to start the expedition in the polar night. So leaving for about a month in the total darkness seems crazy and boring, but it's a very special experience, especially when you on a clear day you ski under the northern lights. So that will be the first challenge, and then hopefully, depending on the COVID-19 situation. But we hope to go to the southern Patagonia ice cap. And there, the idea is to collect some black carbon all the way and deliver this to friends who are scientists. So that will be the next two projects we have aligned for 21.
Wow. Good luck on those. We'll be following along. Can't wait to
Thanks, Mason, to
see you on one of these adventures. This is exciting. You've got so many more to do, and it's going to be years of important work. So I'm excited to follow along and push our listeners to follow you as well and to keep up with you and what you're doing. And we wish you the best of luck and stay safe. This year's been crazy, but I think it's all given us a chance to reconnect with nature and to say, how can we better care for this place? So thank you for the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mason. And hopefully one day we can cross skis on the ice and do the next podcast directly from the field.
Hey, I'm all down for that. We've done that before. So hey, if you've got the way to do it, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, great to hear.
Good. All right, Vincent. Well, have a great night, man, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, you too. Talk
all
soon.
Right.
Bye.
All right, bye. First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.